I'm Jamie Hurst, and for the MSU Denver Alumni Association, we're excited to bring you Bird Talk, a podcast about our alumni, their careers, and their lives.
I need a radio that's attached to my grill. It needs to be built into the grill.
That is awesome.
But you would have bought it, right? You know?
I mean, my dad definitely would have, yeah.
Today's guest is Kayla Wright Jackson. Kayla is a two-time graduate of MSU Denver, earning a bachelor's degree in exercise science in 2017 and a master's of health administration in 2019. After graduating, Kayla relocated to Atlanta, where she assumed a leadership role in human resources at a home health organization. It was during that time that she became acutely aware of the challenges associated with consistently recruiting and retaining high-demand talent, especially in entry-level positions that directly impact patient care. Recognizing the need for more effective strategies for recruiters to connect with fresh talent entering the workforce, she co-founded the tech startup Transition in 2021. Today, she is the dynamic CEO and co-founder of Transition, a groundbreaking workforce development program that bridges the gap between skilled healthcare education and employment. Kayla's goal is to make education and job opportunities more accessible, particularly in communities that need them most, helping to uplift individuals and address workforce disparities. Her work has been recognized by Forbes 30 Under 30, the Society for Human Resource Management, and Google Startups, reflecting her commitment to transforming how skilled education and employment are approached. In 2024, she joined the Alumni Association Board of Directors and just last month served as a panelist at the December African American Graduation Celebration. Kayla is an entrepreneur, problem solver, health advocate, and a double roadrunner. Welcome to Bird Talk.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. We're so excited to have you. I mean, it's been a pretty exciting, I don't know if you've ever listened to our podcast. I'm assuming you're a devout listener and have heard all the episodes. But it has been so fun for me in this capacity to just get to understand a little bit more about our alums, their stories, how they got to where they are. And especially with you, what I'm so excited to talk about is the impact that you're having. And really just a few years from graduation, that's got to feel pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome. Did not think I would be here today, but I'm glad I am.
Yeah, as we are too. Now, full transparency. So I saw when I started doing my, you know, internet stalking research on you, I spent way too much time trying to figure out if I actually taught you or not, because I teach in the exercise science. And I was like, oh my gosh, this will be really embarrassing if she was in my class. And I, you know, I didn't know. But I think I just missed you because I started in 2018.
Oh, yep.
Teaching the legal liabilities course. And I think you'd already gone through that. So you probably had Dr. Collis for that class.
Dr. Collis, perhaps. To be honest.
Mm-hmm. There was someone else who taught law too before me, I think. Okay. But I was like slightly relieved that I was like, oh man, that could be really embarrassing if I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. And sure enough, you had actually been in my course.
Yeah, no, I loved that program a lot. Mm-hmm. Exercise science was definitely my jam. I wanted to be an athletic trainer and then a physical therapist. So I had a lot of fun with the program.
Yeah. But then you realize that athletic training is like the most underappreciated job on the planet.
It is.
You work all the hours for none of the money and you are at the beck and call of coaches and athletes. And so good informed decision to not have gone down that route. But they are much needed. I'll tell you, man, there's an ATC shortage for sure.
Right.
So when I was taking a look at you, I realized you actually transferred here from Hampton University. So I don't even know where you're from. So I just kind of want to start with the whole thing. Where did you grow up and how did you land in Denver?
I know, right? I've been all over the country. So I'm actually born and raised in Denver, Colorado. Most of my family's there. I finished high school and I went to Hampton University for a couple of years. And that's where I actually got to be a student athletic trainer. So I was helping the football team.
And
the football team and the track team. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And the reason why I got into athletic training myself was because I had a personal back injury. So I was a volleyball player.
Yeah.
I was supposed to play in college, but then I got hurt in high school. So I decided to pursue how to heal myself. That's actually how the whole exercise science kinesiology interest came about, is because I had my personal injury. So then I wanted to work with athletes. And so I did that at Hampton University. And then I just came back home, personal reasons, and I went to MSU Denver. I have a lot of family members that went to MSU as well. So I was like, why not be a roadrunner as well?
Absolutely. I love that. I'm just curious, was your transfer experience smooth or was this before we had done a lot of the adjustments that we've had to make it as easy as it is to transfer here?
It was smooth. It was extremely smooth.
Awesome.
I left in May and I think I actually took summer classes. Yeah. So it was like,
that's awesome.
Right away. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's 56, 57% of our students have, you know, come with some sort of transfer experience, whether that is they were community college coming in to finish their bachelor's degree, or they started somewhere else and then said, nope, but not for me for whatever reasons.
Yep.
So it is always so important to me to make sure that that first interaction with campus and with the people that you meet through that transfer process is impeccable, because that's setting the stage. And I think our registrar and our admissions and those teams and our transfer teams have done a really great job of making sure that we can just accept you. You're not going to lose 2 years of work that you already did. We'll bring in all your credits. And in fact, in many ways, we'll even accommodate some of the experiences that you had just so that we can get you through school. So I'm glad to hear that.
Exactly.
So you got here, you stayed in the kinesiology space, took you 2 years to finish your bachelor's degree. So you're pretty traditional in that regard, just 4 years start to finish.
Yep.
And then upon graduation, you say, okay, I'm going to keep learning.
Yep.
Why was MSU Denver the place that you said, this is what I want to do? And was it specifically the MHA program, or was it just that you loved this campus so much you didn't want to leave?
Great question. It was actually both. I really did fall in love with MSU and how much of a community it was.
Yeah.
I got a real good feel of what my classmates were doing outside of class and just learning about the different things going on campus. I wish I got a little more involved, but I wanted to stay to get more involved. I had then heard about, you know, the MHA program, you know, they were kind of recruiting for it. I was at that time, I did have some experience as a physical therapist as well. So, I mean, I was working in a physical therapy clinic as an aide, but then I figured out, I don't think patient care is for me. I actually wanted to get more into administration. So, because I saw so many issues with patient care.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to be more, you know, in charge of policy making and operations to make things go smoother. I had some personal family issues, like with my grandfather actually having issues with his care. And then like I had issues with my care. So I really wanted to get into administration. I thought the MHA program was perfect for that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I wanted to keep learning at MSU. I didn't want to go anywhere. I loved the campus vibes.
Yeah.
You know, I loved being downtown. There was new things going on campus, always events and new buildings popping up. I wanted to stick around.
Still are. They still are. I'll tell you, you got to get back here. We've got a groundbreaking that'll probably happen sometime this summer, early fall, kind of a new, it'll be our classroom to career hubs or our career services, like comprehensive career services.
Yes.
But it's going to also now include student residences. So we're actually going to have dorms on campus for our students, which is a huge win for, I think, our population and our students in general. And then, of course, the Health Institute Tower is going to be groundbreaking here really soon. So many things that are just
amazing,
incredible. And I remember once, I mean, I've only worked in higher ed my entire career, but I remember once somebody saying to me, if you're ever interviewing for jobs on a college campus and you don't see construction, don't go work there. That is a bad sign that the growth isn't happening and that they're not really thinking about what's next and how to accommodate the changes that are either happening economically, society, you know, however that might look. And so that has stuck with me. I think I was 21, 22 years old, but for me, it has stuck with me. And so as long as MSU Denver keeps growing and building and being thoughtful about what their population needs, this is my home, you know?
Exactly. And that's another thing I noticed too, is how thoughtful MSU was about supporting its various demographic of students.
Yeah.
And that's what really, I was like, wow, I don't see this a lot happening on other campuses. Mm-hmm. And it was really eye-opening. So just being honest, a lot of people didn't talk about MSU back then like they should have been. And it's just such an amazing campus.
It is. Well, I'm glad to hear. That's why we're doing part of this, is just to get that word out.
Yeah.
I think I've been here 11 years now. And we used to talk about things as like, oh, MSU Denver having the chip on their shoulders. Then it turned into like the best kept secret in the city.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are we leaning into this like less than mentality? Let's just start screaming from the top of wherever anyone will listen.
Heck yeah.
But no, we're doing it, and we're doing it right. And we're doing it, to your point, in a thoughtful way that is, it makes it feel almost like we're catering our experiences and our opportunities to our demographic. And that is very unique.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you, a lot of schools are not doing that.
Mm-mm.
I know. So you did mention some of your personal like precipice to get into the healthcare. And I did, like I said, I did some really significant internet stalking that I can't really believe is legal, but we'll save that for another episode. but I did read that one of your significant motivators to create this change was a really difficult situation with your grandfather and his lack of home health care and kind of what happened with that. And so I sit here and I think like the older I get, the more I really start to realize and understand that when we experience loss or grief in some way, it is just like bottled up power, right? And so for many of us, we turn that power into like sadness, anger, depression, whatever that might look like. For you, it sounds like you took that power and were like, no, I'm going to do something with this. I mean, and you even said it in terms of your own back injury. And like, that was like, no, 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 I'm going to learn how to fix people because I want to fix myself and this should happen. Have you always been that way where you see that kind of as like, here's the light at the end of the tunnel? Or do you actually find yourself sitting in like the anger, like the rest of us? Basically, I'm just trying to get validation that it's okay that I get angry when things don't go right.
You know what, Jamie, that's a great question. It's not wrong for people to get angry, right? But if you want to see change, when you don't like something, you have to be a part of that change because it's been happening for so long in this way. Innovation is the only thing that's really going to drive real change. Just for my own self, I had to get better. The doctors threatened me like I would be in a wheelchair at this age right now, at the age of 30. And I was determined to not let that happen. You know, I'm a highly active person. I could never see myself in a wheelchair at such a young age. And so I was determined at that point. And then, you know, with my grandfather, I was highly upset. And I knew that I wasn't the only person or family going through these issues because I had researched other horror stories and heard it as I was working as a healthcare recruiter. You know, I heard these stories about how people didn't get the care that they needed. And it's just something so simple, you know, the hierarchy of needs, you know what I mean? The basic needs is like safety and health. We need that. And so I just thought it was so important to at least try to help the problem.
And I just appreciate that so much because it is easy. You're not wrong. Most of us, we will go through all of those feelings. But for so many of us and so much of our population, we stop before we get to that point where it's like, okay, now I need to act because I need to change. And I just love that, especially at such a young age, that that has just been something that has been embedded in you. And that's probably a huge testament to why you have been so successful at such a young age. I mean, you mentioned you're 30 years old. I mean, Forbes named you 30 under 30 in Atlanta. That had to be freaking awesome, right?
Yeah. It was really awesome.
Did that shock you? Like, were you expecting that? Did you get a heads up? Or was it just like, hey, open this email? I envision it like the same way I'm sure you got these two. Like, oh, guess what, Jamie? You've joined the Who's Who America. Pay this $600 and you can be in this book, you know? And it's always this fake thing. But this was like a real one that came that's like, hey, man, you're doing something pretty incredible and we see you. That had to feel pretty great.
I mean, honestly, it was very surprising. Somebody nominated me and I still don't know to this day who it was. And I got one notification from the team asking me for my information, you know, like a headshot and a bio. And I was like, wow. So like, that was it. So to see myself on that page with all these other highly accomplished people, business people, athletes, you know, making multi-million dollars. I was humbled at that point. I was just like, wow, this is really incredible. And you know, just a huge testament that I'm on the right track and just to keep going. It's moments like that, you know, like entrepreneurship is so hard. And it's moments like that where people recognize you that you just want to keep going because not just for my own personal gain, but it's because you're obviously making an impact or inspiring somebody else somewhere.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That simple act of just being seen is oftentimes all the affirmation we need to just keep going. And I think we need to be very cognizant about how we can show people around us. It's not always going to be a nomination for a 30 under 30 award, right? Sometimes it's just simply going to be like, hey, I saw you did this thing that really mattered. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I think if we could do more of that, we'd get a little bit more fuel in that space. But no, I was looking at that list. You're right. I mean, it's professional athletes, entrepreneurs, musicians, filmmakers, content creators, political activists. Like, what a cool deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I do love that you just mentioned this entrepreneurial journey because your passions and your interests have this core in healthcare, obviously, and in healthcare advocacy work and that relationship and building that, making sure people get the care they need by really looking at it from the recruitment and staffing perspective. But what you've done is you've built a startup tech company. And so, yes, you were focused in on this healthcare space, but you've become an entrepreneur in every sense of the word. So I sit there and I think about, gosh, yeah, you went to school, you have 4 years undergrad in the kinesiology space. So you're understanding the body, understanding how things work. You get the administrative degree with your master's degree. And then all of a sudden you're in a position where they're like, okay, now go raise money. Like, it always blows my mind. And you're not our first entrepreneurial kind of person on this podcast. Yeah. And every time I'm always like, how does that happen? Like, I've gone to a lot of school. I've got a lot of degrees. I know a lot of things. I have no idea how I would start a business. And so you're, you know, in your mid-20s going, okay, I got to do this. Where do you even start?
That's a great question. I was thinking the same thing. But to be honest, what's really cool nowadays is that they have a lot of accelerators and incubators for businesses. And we launched our business October 2021. And then we got into Techstars Workforce Development, which is actually out of Denver.
Yeah.
So that gave us a lot of information. Like, we didn't know what we were doing. We just knew we had a problem. We knew there were people who needed our solution. And we had an idea. We had an idea of how we could solve this problem. But you learn so much. I mean, still to this day, I don't know everything, but constantly learning every day. But those accelerators are very instrumental for getting us funding and getting us the logistics of how to run a business and what all of that entails. So we are constantly growing our network through these accelerator programs and these incubator programs, because there's a lot of great resources out there, industry stakeholders that really want to help you too. So that's really been a huge part of how we've been able to just grow and keep the business going.
Yeah. I mean, as I was looking at it, I think you've raised almost, maybe more now at this point, almost $1 million, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the 50 companies selected for the Google Startups Black Founders Fund.
Right.
You have the TechStart, Jumpstart, Foundry. Then what I loved, and I want to talk to you a little bit about Corey too, because I want to know this, like how this happened, because you both have a shared vision, but totally different people with different unique skill sets. And it sounds like just the perfect pairing for starting a business. Mm-hmm. But you did the HBCU Founders Accelerator. And that one I loved because, yes, you got an investment that came to help you in this space, but you also got executive level support and guidance.
Yes.
And to me, that's that educational piece that I love, that it's coming out of higher ed in general, and especially the HBCU system, that it's like, no, we recognize money doesn't solve all the problems. You need the skills, the guidance, the mentorship in that space. And then even just this recent, the Pitch Mayhem competition that you won in Reno, you now get support from UNLV. And so it's one of those things where I'm like, gosh, how smart that these incubators and kind of these startup funders are realizing that money alone is not enough. It's actually the network, the support, the mentorship. And so what a cool thing that you've not only been successful in one of those, but a handful of those. And it sounds like you're really leveraging that to the nth degree.
Absolutely. 100%. Like, business is all about relationships, right? Yeah. And that's something we learned really fast. Like, we know we try to go out and sell and we didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That was really hard. So those incubators, like I mentioned, have been super instrumental. And most of them, through them, we got a partnership somehow. Like, they would introduce us to a potential client or customer or, you know, somebody in their network who could introduce us to a client or customer. So yeah, without them, we wouldn't be here today. Like, for example, we were a part of the Volunteers of America Community Health Incubator, and they have affiliates all across the nation. And currently, we're about to contract with three of them.
Oh, that's awesome.
If we weren't through that incubator, we probably wouldn't have those partnerships. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's all about the ends. I mean, even in the fundraising world, which obviously I'm most aware of, I spent my first few years in fundraising actually writing grants. So I ran a corporate and foundation relations team. And so some of it was federal and state grants, because we were at a private school. So you kind of did it all. And those are pretty straightforward. You fill out the form. There's not a lot of relationships. It's a lot of bureaucracy. Mm. But when we're talking about funders, and especially what we do so well here at MSU Denver, under the leadership of Zach Tardif, who's our executive director in that space, and his team, is these relationships that he builds with our corporate partners, so that they are as invested in the work that we do at MSU Denver, educationally with our students, in our career placement, industry partnerships. They are so invested in us and recognize us as kind of a stronghold in this community, especially the Denver community, let alone Colorado, that then when you get to the point that you ask them for a donation, and this isn't even like, oh, we're giving you a product that's going to help you. This is like, we just want your money for free, right? But when we get to that point that we ask you for a donation, they feel that it is a good use of funds, right? That we are going to not only be good stewards for their gift, but that they're putting their money to work in a place that is going to amplify whatever interest or passion area or mission that they have in a way that maybe they can, which education often can. I think when I first started telling people, like, I remember telling my dad, like, oh, yeah, I got this new job. I'm writing, you know, grants for money. He's like, oh, so you're just going to sit behind a computer all day and write grants? And I was like, no, most of my job is actually in a car driving to people's offices, getting to know them, telling them about me, telling them about our organization, telling them about our incredible students and faculty, and getting them to buy in on what I've bought in as an employee so that when I ask them for money, which is actually the easiest part, because at that point, you already, like, we've sold you on the good that we do that we're in there. And he was just like, so you're telling me a grant writer and you're just, it's about relationships. And I was like, this, I'm never going to win this argument. Yes is the answer, right? You know,
it's hard to understand if you've never been in that situation. Yeah,
it is. But I do think it's completely relational to any industry that you're in. Like, my father was a restaurant manager for 45 years. And I'm like, Dad, you're not telling me that if some new vendor came in and was like, hey, we want to supply you with your salad, right, you know, your lettuce for your salad, that you were just like, oh, let me just look at dollars and cents. You weren't. I can guarantee you that you were in a position that you might have even been overpaying at some point in time for something that you could have gotten cheaper because you had a good relationship with that company and you could trust things and you knew that things were going to happen. And he's like, well, that's different. I was like, so it's not.
No, this same exact thing.
But yes, sir, whatever you say, you know.
Yeah.
Probably pretty incredible to learn that too at such a young age and at the start of building a business, because the other guests and alums that we've had on that have talked about their like entrepreneurial efforts, like Travis Luther was our very first guest and he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
But he has started and stopped so many businesses. And his message in this space was just, I failed like 10 times for every one time I've been successful. And that is a common story you hear. And yet you're sitting here going, no, I tried this thing once and man, it's going off like gangbusters. And so I do think, A, that's awesome and a testament to you. But I think it's also how much further the industry in general has moved, that we do have things like incubators that are recognizing it's not just about capital.
Right.
It's about support and building those networks. And we're teaching those softer skills of business
exactly
earlier on. And so you're not just going, well, no, my returns and everything's looking great. Why isn't this working? Well, people don't trust you. They don't trust what's happening. They need to understand the system, right?
Absolutely. And to solve a real problem too.
100%.
Because I've seen a lot of startups get millions of dollars, have a huge network and fail.
Oh yeah.
Because they're not solving real problems sometimes, or, you know.
No, in a problem that, what's nice about healthcare, what's great about healthcare problems, I don't mean it in a perky way, but what is true about healthcare problems is that they touch all of us.
Yes.
And yes, I think there's a disproportionate way that it affects people based on where you live, you know, ethnicity, languages you speak. It's absolutely disproportional.
Yep.
But even if you come from the most privileged background with the most wealth, you're still going to be hit with healthcare problems. Yep. And so it is a problem that I think is understood by everybody. Now, whether they're all in a place that they have to solve that problem until something happens to them, they may not be. But it is a genuine problem that needs to be solved.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit more about transition, since we kind of skipped over the fact that, oh, you started this cool company and then I got so excited about the entrepreneurial stuff. But transition, I mean, I know I described it in my opening, but I'm sure you can describe it better. But at the heart of it is what you're trying to do is match companies and employers with the employees that have the skill set that they need so that we're meeting workforce need demands and doing it in a way that we're thoughtful about retention and accessibility.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a piece there too that we really focus on getting this talent in their earliest days, which is while they're in school.
Yeah.
Because what we found, so, you know, we say is we're bridging the gap between healthcare education and employment. Mm-hmm. So getting that talent while they're in school. So we've worked with vocational schools, universities. We've worked with scholars of like American Heart Association. So while these individuals are in training, whatever they're learning, whatever curriculum they're learning, we're finding that we're trying to help them match their skill set to a specific employer. And that's not an easy thing for young professionals to do on platforms like Indeed or something where it's not very specific, right? So we've taken a highly curated niche group of individuals and trying to match them with niche group of employers so that it can be more efficient, more effective hiring. And because that's part of the problem when it comes to recruiting and healthcare is there's so many different things that employers need to collect in terms of making sure you are ready for this specific role. I was a healthcare recruiter myself and that was during the pandemic. So I got employed and like 2 months later, the pandemic hit and I was like, whoa, it was really hard to source qualified and vetted candidates in a timely manner because we didn't have tools that were specific to what we were looking for. So that's part of what we're trying to do is just streamline that whole interaction for employers who are extremely desperate for this in-demand talent. Mm-hmm. Just making it easier too for people to enter into the workforce because there's so many barriers, you know, that they have. So, you know, we're working with these educational institutions to make sure they're getting certified or they're getting these degrees or making sure they have the exact skill set that they need for their specific career they're trying to go into. So there's a component for the education and there's a component for the employer. So our platform is technically a marketplace. Mm-hmm. So we are serving both sides. And so a lot of technology that went into that.
So speaking of that, so you've co-founded this with your business partner, Corey Shaw. I found less about him, so you can let him know that I did not stalk him to the degree that I did you.
Okay.
But what I what I loved was this idea that, again, shared vision that there's a problem in healthcare and we want to fix it. You're coming in with this master's in health administration, like here's all the things that could be done differently and probably better that are broken in our healthcare system. He's coming in as a software engineer going, yeah, I think I can probably do something. Mm-hmm. So how did you guys meet? And was it like, oh, perfection at first sight? Was it like, yeah, I have this idea. I can put in the zeros and ones.
Yeah, it was actually interesting because so at this time I was in Georgia, right? And I was working for a home care organization for about a year. I was in HR. I was the head of HR trying to hire for our clients. And I just had a really hard time consistently sourcing vetted talent. So I was like, there's got to be a better way to find this talent. And I started to look and there were so many vocational schools teaching healthcare programs, like nursing assistant, a medical assistant, licensed practical nurse, you know, and a lot of these are like fast-paced programs. And so every 4 weeks, they would have a whole new cohort of nursing assistants that were ready to work. You know what I mean? And so as an employer, which I started to see other employers doing, they were going to these schools. They were bringing lunch to kids. They were collecting resumes in person or going to the graduations. They didn't really have career fairs as much. You know, it was kind of really unorganized, non-scalable, just knocking on doors, trying to get talent, you know?
Right.
His family actually owns a few of those healthcare vocational schools in Georgia. They were constantly seeing the problem of these students asking their instructors, can you help me find a job?
Where do I work? Yeah.
Can you help connect me to employers? And of course they want to help, but limited capacity, limited resources, they could only do so much, right? So they were inviting the employers to the school. But again, that takes class time, that takes employers' time, it takes, it's just not scalable. And so he was already building some technology for the schools to make them more innovative in terms of student information systems and stuff like that. So we met that way because I went to his family school, figured out, hey, there's something here. We can work together. You know, I have a problem. You have a problem. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out how we can solve this. And essentially, we built a virtual career center.
Cool.
That now we give all these schools their own white labeled virtual career center. So it's branded to them. It makes them seem like they're offering the students a whole lot more value. You know, at the end of the day, these individuals are not just going to training just to get a certificate or a license. They want to work. That also makes the school look better. They're able to track their outcomes better. They're able to present that to the state or get more grant money, whatever it is, showing that they're actually helping these students connect with employers in the local area. So that's really just how it started, building career resources around students building resumes, practicing interview simulations.
Yep.
They didn't get any of that. They didn't have career advisors. They didn't have career centers, you know, so that's just how it came about.
You filled the gap,
Yeah, filled the gap.
I love it. The MSU Denver Health Institute is where passionate students, expert faculty, and industry leaders come together to tackle today's biggest health challenges. From cutting-edge programs to hands-on learning opportunities, we're preparing the next generation of health professionals to make a real difference. Discover how the Health Institute is driving change and how you can be a part of it. Learn more at msudenver.edu/healthinstitute. Together, we're building healthier communities, one Roadrunner at a time. Roadrunner special alert. MSU Denver is rising, and we want you to rise with us. For the first time ever, MSU Denver is in a comprehensive fundraising campaign with a goal of raising $100 million in support of our deserving university and students. Grab every Roadrunner you know and join us on February 19th as we celebrate our incredible university and look towards the future. Learn about our fundraising priorities, embrace your Roadrunner school spirit, and find out how you can help all Roadrunners rise. So save the date, February 19, 2025. You won't want to miss it. This episode is brought to you by the birds that write their own songs, Taylor Swift's. As I'm listening to you explain like the problems you're solving and what you were kind of working towards and what you're focused on, it is screaming to me like so many of the similarities with how MSU Denver approaches their education, right? Mm-hmm. So our C2 hub is literally what you're talking about, mm-hmm. is this idea of finding our industry partners. Like we have industry mm-hmm. navigators here on campus that are employees that literally are assigned to specific industry cells in the space, saying what exact skills and resources and needs do you have? And here's the group of curated students that meet those things. And we're trying to make employment as concierge for our employers.
Yeah.
So as easy as possible for them. But at the same time, making sure that our students actually get into the places where their skill sets are going to lend themselves to the best career trajectory, right?
Right.
So that part is so similar that I'm like, I love that. Mm-hmm. The end of your time here was probably the beginning of our real Health Institute development.
Yeah.
That is what the Health Institute is too. This really thoughtful, focused co-curricular program. I think we have 10 academic programs, everything from exercise science to, you know, biology and you name it,
yeah.
that are coming together to try and figure out what are the actual skill sets that employers need
yep.
to be able to serve our patients in a way that meets their needs. Even as I was thinking about it, it's grounded in so much of the same philosophy. And when I look at why our Health Institute came to be, right, it's this idea that we took a look at what is the problem happening in this country, and even more localized, what is the problem happening here in Colorado? Mm-hmm. And the numbers are staggering. I think across the United States, by like 2028, 2027, they're saying that we're supposed to have a shortage, a healthcare deficit of 3 million workers,
yep.
right? Colorado is one of the worst situated in that space. They're saying that we need 10,000 nurses by next year.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you couple the fact that our population is very diverse up and down the Front Range area and on the I-25 corridor, but everywhere. But only 10% of our healthcare workers are actually comprised of people of color.
Yeah.
So now not only are we dealing with this dichotomy of like rural versus urban healthcare access, which we know is different. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to get a doctor when you're in an urban area than you are in a rural area. Then when we go to the rural areas, we're dealing with a socioeconomic difference and sometimes a racial difference, sometimes a language barrier. And none of these doctors look like me.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, we have 10,000 less than what we actually need. So we're just going to send them to more densely populated spaces. There are so many problems there that very thoughtfully and in an entrepreneurial spirit, MSU Denver came forward and said, we can solve a lot of these, right? And mm-hmm. so very similar to your experience, leaned into our community of healthcare providers that are experts in the space and said, what do you need? How do we need to do this?
Yeah.
We've got the students, we've got the workforce, help us, mm-hmm. right? And so whether it's curriculum focused stuff or certifications or whatever we can provide that's going to help them be employable upon graduation, we've built these great partnerships with places like Colorado Access
yeah.
and with Caring for Denver and Caring for Colorado
yep.
and all these wonderful kind of agencies that are healthcare focused in Denver to build something that's going to solve those problems. And I forget sometimes how entrepreneurial MSU Denver is.
Oh, yeah.
That we did exactly what you talked about. But then I think about, gosh, what an impact and an influence that potentially could have had on you as a student, someone that was here on this campus for 4 years to say, here's how we solve problems. And then bam, you're turning around this wonderful product and business idea in transition that is solving a lot of the same issues that mm-hmm. we see one-sidedly on a college campus, but now you're doing it in combination with industry partners, which is, it's just, you solved a problem. You did it. Congratulations.
Thank you. Totally. Colorado is an MSU as well, but Colorado is definitely very forward-thinking with this healthcare shortage. I believe, you know, like Governor Polis's Care Forward Colorado initiative. We've been seeing more of that pop up around the nation where they're funding individuals to go get this type of training, because that's also a barrier for a lot of the diverse populations, right? Like the minorities or the underfunded, the people of these different backgrounds where education might not be so easily accessible for them.
Right.
So, you know, that's one thing we really try to do at Transition is partner with organizations like that that are supporting these traditionally underserved communities, which will bring in a different type of population to go work in the workforce now to make it more diverse and fitting for the areas that they're serving. And, you know, that's a huge part of it too, as you mentioned, like just bridging those gaps, finding ways to better support people getting into these careers.
Yeah.
All for it.
That's awesome. Obviously, you stole your ideas from MSU Denver, so you're welcome. And it sounds like you also stole a roadrunner with you. So you had a fellow student with you, Katina Chaffin, who you were a student with in the MHA program and then came over to transition with you.
Yeah. Katrina, we were in the MHA program together. And I was like, who can I bring on to help with just starting up this business? And I thought of Katrina. Mm-hmm. She has a deep background in healthcare administration. She was actually a nursing assistant herself. So she knew firsthand as well what it was like to be a young professional trying to get into a career. She used to want to be like, you know, an RN, but things changed. She got into administration as well, right?
So at some point, you want to stop doing the dirty work and you want to fix it so that other people don't have to do the same dirty work you did, right?
Yeah. But it's really important to, you know, to bring on people who are just as passionate about solving the problem as you. And so she was a perfect addition.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
When I saw the Red article that I think Corey Fair did on you a couple year or two ago. And so, as I was reading that, I was like, not only is this story just compelling in the work that you've done and what you've managed to build in such a short amount of time, but how connected and how impactful it appeared that your MHA experience was, that not only did you get the education and have the great faculty in that space to teach you these things, but your colleagues and your peers were equally just so bought into what needed to happen. And I love that story. I love when we take roadrunners along with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's very awesome. I do want to circle back to how you kind of got reconnected with MSU Denver and what you're hoping to accomplish through that. But I want to give you all the share and all the time to talk about your company because this is free press, right? For all of our millions of viewers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, definitely for transition, our long-term goal is really to be that platform that is supporting multiple skilled professionals, bridging that gap from education to employment, because we have been approached by many organizations like, hey, are you just going to focus on healthcare? Because we need this in the automotive or the construction industry, because we're working with a lot of these organizations that support various type of workforce initiatives. So we definitely want to be long-term that go-to platform that can support multiple of these in-demand industries. And the big vision is definitely just to support as many young professionals or new professionals changing careers as possible, bridging these gaps that are impacting all of us in so many different ways. You know, the skilled workforce is the backbone of America. And I feel like there's not enough attention put on that. And it's just going to open the door for so many people who are stuck with trying to find, what can I do in my career? And so we just want to help as many people as we can.
Yeah, I would imagine it's so easy for an outsider to see like, oh gosh, you're doing it in this one space and it's totally scalable. And the response is always like, yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. And that comes with time and you want to do it right.
Yes.
Right? You don't just want to open up your product and say, sure, let's work with the local union for welders. And now we're in this space, but we don't have any expertise in that space. And so I do love that that is on the horizon for you, but you're being very thoughtful about not expanding too quickly and without a level of expertise, because it does sound like both you and Corey are in a situation that you had that healthcare foundation there that allows you to be a little bit more thoughtful and understanding of what is really needed. There's nothing easier to determine what you need than having been in that world and been like, yeah, that wasn't provided. This would have been really helpful.
Right.
Right.
You got it.
So you've just recently, I mean, you've only graduated 5-6 years ago, so it's not like you've been gone for a very long time, but recently you started to get more connected with MSU Denver. As we mentioned in your intro, we recognized all this cool stuff that you're doing. Mm-hmm. In 2023, you got our 10 under 10 award, and then that kind of puts you on our radar as like, oh, this lady's going somewhere, and we want to make sure that we tag along for the ride. Mm-hmm. And then we're very thrilled to know that when Brandy Rideout offered you a spot on our alumni board of directors, you accepted. So what was your thought process there? Like, is there something that at the heart of this that you're like, gosh, this could be a really great connecting point for both MSU Denver students and myself professionally?
I was extremely honored. And it's just really just like a full circle moment.
Yeah.
Why not go back and give to the organization, the university that laid the foundation for you to be who you are today? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to ever repay MSU. I had amazing experiences there. I learned so much. And again, it laid the groundwork for who I am and what I'm doing today. So I kind of feel like I owed it. I owed it to the university to give back. Yeah. But what's really cool is that I am so passionate now about supporting students with taking that next step into their career.
Yeah.
There's different departments within the board that we can support. And, you know, I'm really into supporting the student engagement and student retention initiatives, because I feel like, you know, that's just so important for students to know that we do care about them and we really want to see them succeed, because I think there's so often that people don't feel that support. Mm-hmm. And I want the MSU students to know that we want to be with them along the entire continuum of their education.
That's awesome.
I was just super excited. I was like, oh, this could be so fun. Like right? All the events I can go to and all the people I can talk to and
all the free swag.
All the free swag. Yeah. I can show off my school. And
you know,
it's just really eye-opening. I got to meet some amazing students while we were there, and just listening to their stories and their testimonies about the struggles that they've been through. You know, we have a lot of non-traditional students at MSU, but yeah. Those, I feel like those are the coolest students. Like, they have so much that they've been through, but they're like persevering through it all, and they're still going hard. And that's just so inspiring to see. And I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, Brandy told me that while you were here for the board retreat this fall, you met a C2 Hub ambassador, Nicole, who's in cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And immediately she was like, oh no, they were just like on each other. Because yeah. Nicole was like, I'm in cybersecurity. I don't know how to get a job. Yeah. I don't know what to do. And you're like, sweetheart, come here. Let me tell you. And so I do love that. Yeah. And we say that all the time. Yes, our podcasts, all of these things that we do are great ways to learn a little bit about this institution. But if you really want to understand MSU Denver, talk to a student.
Yeah.
Because you were sucked in immediately, mm-hmm. right? And you're not alone in that. That is all of our community members that have built some sort of partnership and have kind of adopted MSU Denver's mission as something that is important to them as well. Mm-hmm. It's because they met a student that said, hey, let me tell you a little bit about me and my story and why MSU Denver is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I love to hear that you had that interaction, especially one of your first times back on campus since graduating, right?
Yes. And yeah. So looking forward to more of those. I kind of sad that I'm not in Denver now. I'm like, great. So now I'm kind of missing some of the action, but I'm definitely going to try to be there as much as I can to have more of those interactions with students, mm-hmm. like at the event for the, you know, Black African American graduation mm-hmm. ceremony. I got to connect with some individuals as well. And they just came up to me and just started telling me their stories and what they want to do, what they want to be, and how can I take this next step? And this is amazing. Like, I could do this all day.
That's awesome. It
fills my heart.
Ah, I love it. Well, we're doing an alumni event this summer out in the East Coast. Do you know the times?
Boston.
We're in Boston. Yeah, we're going to be in Boston. We're going to do a live podcast out there at a bar that's owned by an alum. So free swag, free drinks. That's why I'm in the job.
I'm visiting ESPN.
Yeah, and we're going to go to Connecticut and visit ESPN. So we'll go see Gary Streisky, who is an ESPN Sports Center anchor that's an alum.
That's awesome.
He was on our podcast early and I was like super nervous. So I'm like, is this thing on? And then I was like, also like, you're on TV. I watch you on TV. This is awesome.
That is awesome.
But we are heading to the East Coast. So we'll make sure that I know that the East Coast is bigger than in my brain. I'm always like, oh, it's right there. It's
right
like a
there.
Hop, skip, and a jump. It's probably not. I get that. But when we're heading that way, we'll make sure we reach out to you guys because we want to get as much of our East Coast contingency of Roadrunners together for some fun celebration. And I think we're even going to try and bring a couple students so we can have those interactions.
Yeah,
so that you have.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, I know I'm charming and meeting me is fantastic. It is not the same as meeting a student, you know? It's too funny. Ruby, anything else you want to ask Kayla about?
Kayla, I'm really intrigued about your time in the MHA program. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious about what your experience was. If you can speak a little bit, kind of like a teaser for the program, because I'm sure they would really like to hear your voice and speaking to your experience and what brought you there.
Yeah, absolutely. I had an amazing experience with the MHA program. There was never a dull moment. We did a lot of case studies and group projects, picking apart different policies that may be going on over here, like at a local hospital, or comparing it to another one and looking at patient outcomes from that standpoint. And so kind of figuring out how can we better support the patients. And that's what I really loved, is that whole MHA program was always tailored on having a better healthcare system. And that's what we were all so passionate about. We all know how complex healthcare is, how outdated the systems were, how much work it needed, just in many ways. You know, healthcare is just one of the most underserved industries, which is so strange to me. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make any sense. It touches everybody. Like you said, everybody in the United States gets it, but like the least amount of support working in operations to make it better seemed so slow. What I loved is that we were always trying to figure out how can we make the system better. We would talk about people's lived experiences, or we would do a lot of research. We did a lot of group work. Public health was very interesting. We explored a lot of about the public health sector. And then we talked about finances too. That was probably my least favorite class.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Man, like the insurances and how all that works or doesn't work.
Or does it? I was going to say, does it? Does it work? I don't know.
Does it work? So it was just like real life learning to me. Very hands-on, very interactive. I would say probably, one of the most important programs out there right now is just how to better support patient care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of fun. Amazing, highly knowledgeable professors. A lot of them worked in the healthcare industry or still do. And so having their firsthand experience and insights was just invaluable. And I just hear it's continually growing. I think I was the first cohort.
Okay.
Yeah. Or
that did not come up in my Googling. So I'll get better at my stalking skills.
I have to check in that. I think I was like one of the first graduating class or something like that. And so that was really cool.
That is very cool.
We were like the pioneers of the program, you know? So we did a lot of picking it apart and giving good feedback to the professors as to what we like to see. But most of it was just incredible.
Yeah, that's great. You're now actually our second pioneer, right? Because Abby Lundeen was our first woman that graduated from the brewing major. And now we have our first graduate from the cohort of that. So now we got a whole second sub-series of Bird Talk, which is to be the first.
We do need to fact check that.
We'll validate. We'll fact check it. That's fine. And we're just going to go with it. And that is just going to be the title of it. And we're just digging our heels in, right?
I like it.
We finish up with rapid fire questions, but I got one more half serious question before we go to that.
Okay.
So if you had to define yourself as only one of these, are we choosing healthcare administrator, entrepreneur, or just like badass boss? what are we going with?
Badass boss.
100%. You know? All right. Good. I'm glad we're on the same page. Because I was sitting there like, you know what? I feel like this could be an entrepreneurial episode. This could be a health episode. Or this could just about being like the world's biggest badass boss. You know, like this is how we roll. Well, I appreciate you spending time with us. I know you said you already had a long day. Hopefully this was a good little break for you and a little levity in your day. But we do finish all of our podcasts with the same three rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So I'm going to hit you with them here. First one, what is your favorite MSU Denver memory?
That's interesting. Definitely when we were in the exercise science program and we got to tape each other.
No more context. No, just leave it at that. I want viewers, people who don't know, to be like, they did what? Did you do competitions though? Like how fast could you tape an ankle?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was such an athletic training culture vibe, is that like, oh, we're going to see how fast we can do this, you know?
Yeah, I'm pretty competitive. So, you know,
fair.
That was fun.
fair. What does it mean to you to be a roadrunner?
It means to be a pioneer.
Yeah.
To run that road in the way that you see fit, because everybody's road and path is different. But just keep running the road.
Mm-hmm. Our president, Dr. Davidson, says the zigzaggy road. And she couldn't be more true because it just encapsulates so many different ways. How fast you run, mm-hmm. which way you're going. Sometimes even though you feel like you're going in an opposite direction, it's because it's a switchback. And I do love that idea that it's for everybody. Mm-hmm. All right, last one. If you could put a billboard on campus with a piece of advice for all students to see, what would it say?
You are enough.
It's awesome. Oh, I'm glad we're getting the old school hearts too. I don't know how the new kids do the hearts. Do you know?
No.
Well, there's that. But then there's this one. I don't know.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
Yeah, they,
oh,
I don't know. That yeah, weird. Well, you didn't see what I did because that's not a thing. I was trying, you're like, oh, I've never seen that. That's because it's incorrect. But yes. But yeah, now it's also like a finger heart. I don't know. Kids these days, I tell you. Wait till you hit 40, Kayla, and then you just stop caring about all the new things. Brandy did tell me that you just recently got engaged too. Congratulations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That I'm glad I still made time for, you know, personal life, because a lot of entrepreneurs don't, right? They put a lot of stuff on the back burner. But you see, you know what? I had goals. I said, I want to be married and be a mom.
There you go.
Eventually. So
it's always such a fun, exciting time, because even though the day to day of, you know, your job and that, there's always movement in that. Mm-hmm. There's something really special about that time mm-hmm. from like when you get engaged till you get married in those first couple years of marriage, where it's like, this is all brand new and it's going to be different for me than it was for anybody. And so congratulations. Thank you. Was super awesome. And hopefully the rest of your afternoon is as delightful.
Thank you guys so much. This was so fun. And I can't wait to hear it. What you're doing with this podcast is amazing. Keep spreading the word about the amazing alumni.
We will. Thank you, Kayla. We'll see you soon.
See ya. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bird Talk, special accommodation provided by University Advancement. Thank you to Ruby Matheny, Brandy Rideout, production provided by David Sharman, and I'm your host, Jamie Hurst. Keep running, roadies.